Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, what's going on? How you living? Welcome to our daily jungle. Hope you had a great Memorial Day weekend. It had to have been better than the cats. The cat napped it out. On the road this weekend, a DUI for Tiger. We also were all over Bryce Harper v. Hunter Strickland and Buster Posey sitting out that benches clearing brawl. We had three excellent guests, Zaza Pachulia of the Golden State Warriors, NBC's Eddie Olczyk after game one of the Stanley Cup Final, and Minnesota Vikings GM Rick Spielman. Avi, what do you say? You do what you do, and you get this thing going. You know, it seems impossible to think, but the guy actually looks worse off the course than he does on it. After getting picked up for DUI near his South Florida home at 3 o'clock in the morning over the weekend. You also probably know he was booked at 7:18 a.m., released on his own recognizance at 10:50 a.m. And with that release, we also see a mugshot for the ages. Rare is the mugshot that is not awesome, but this one is a first ballot Hall of Fame mugshot. The kind of mugger that looks worse and worse every single time you look at it. And my first tweet after that story dropped was, the cat ran down the wrong Jack. So no sooner than that story drops, somebody I respect says to me, you know he's going to come out and just say sorry, and he's going to rehab. And I just laughed and said, you really don't know very much about the cat, do you? No way he owns this. And from the looks of things, Woods and his agents simply did what they always do when Woods does something really stupid. They try to spin and manipulate whatever boneheaded thing he did in order to limit the damage as much as they possibly can. And in this case, they bust right out and say alcohol was not involved. Not that anybody bought that initially. I mean, the cops find him asleep in his car in the middle of the night with the engine still running, brake lights on, right blinker flashing. But alcohol had nothing to do with it. The cat, in a statement, said, quote, I want the public to know that alcohol was not involved. What happened was an unexpected reaction to prescribed medications. I didn't realize the mix of medications had affected me so strongly, end quote. Never mind that that's not the first time he's thrown that card. All right, fair enough. So alcohol was not involved. Something was? What was it? Oxycontin? Meth? Molly? Were you riding the horse? I mean, looking at that mugshot, you very clearly were on something. From the looks of that mugshot, you were on everything. But not alcohol. All right. Good enough. There was no alcohol involved. Or Team Woods was saying that because they think that sounds better than he was just out getting smashed in the middle of the night. Either way, they're working pretty hard here. But why? To preserve what? What's left of his already shot reputation? Trying to keep what sponsors haven't already abandoned him? Maybe if he can sell that he was pilled up as opposed to boozed up, a judge might not rip his kids from him? I mean, who knows? Who knows? Just as I have no idea how that guy, of all guys, doesn't mix in an Uber. Are you really that dumb? Or cheap? Or both? I know. He just didn't realize that the mix of medications that he was on affected him so strongly. Hey, dummy. Driving under the influence is driving under the influence, whether it's booze, pills, or drugs. And that's the kind of thing that pisses me off. I mean, you want to ruin your life and your career, fine. But get behind the wheel in that condition, and there's a very good chance you're going to ruin somebody else's life. Absolutely no excuse to do that for anybody ever, but especially that guy. Now, they can say that he wasn't, or that he was mixing medications. And maybe there was no alcohol involved. But it's clear from reading the police report that he had no business being behind the wheel. The report read, quote, extremely slow and slurred speech. Woods stated that he was coming from L.A., California from golfing. Woods stated that he did not know where he was. Woods had changed his story of where he was going and where he was coming from. Woods asked how far his house was. Also, quote, couldn't pass the walk and turn test, the finger to nose test. And when asked if he understood the directions of the Romberg alphabet, he stated, quote, yes, recite entire national anthem backwards. End quote. So this guy was jacked up. This guy had some serious issues. And the guy with seemingly the most incredible life ever has now jacked it up beyond recognition. One of the most respected and worshipped athletes ever is once again a punchline. To go from the demigod that he was to what he is right now is not easy to do. Do you know how many Escalades you have to wreck and how many Perkins waitresses you have to get with for that to happen? Pretty much all of them. That is not easy to do. And of course, his honks and even some media honks are rushing in and blathering on about how sad it all is. You know what? It's not sad. It's pathetic. The guy is where he is because of the choices he made. We all are. This guy's an object of derision and ridicule because he decided to run around on his wife with a bunch of Perkins waitresses, porn stars, and escorts. No one did that to him. He did that to himself and to his wife and to his kids. Nobody slammed a handful of pills down his throat, allegedly, and made him get into a car in the middle of the night. He made that decision himself. And by the way, Kat, where were you going at 3 o'clock in the morning? Where were you going at 3 o'clock in the morning? Oh, I know, but he's injured, he's hurt. Right, like every other athlete in the history of the world. That's no excuse from him being the bag that he is. If it was, every athlete who tricked a knee or jacked up their back would be running around on their wives, bouncing their Escalade off trees, and getting picked up for DUI. So enough about how sad it is. This guy wasn't dealt a bad hand. He made bad decisions, bad choices, lots of them, and he's still making them. And that's not some bad hand. This guy was holding the best hand ever, and he still managed to screw it up. My man, here's some advice. Forget about golf, get help, stay the hell off the road. Forget about golf, get help, stay the hell off the road. We are joined by Zaza Pachulia. Zaza, great to have you on. How are you?
Thanks, Jim. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
It is so good to have you. Thanks for doing it, Zaza. You know, if you can go back to when you were a free agent last summer, you had offers of more money from other teams. So what was it about Golden State that made you think that was the right place and the right fit?
It's a special group of guys. Obviously, watching and playing against them, playing really beautiful basketball, really well coached, having fun, and just great opportunity for me to join this amazing team, get a great experience, and win the championship. So, looking back, I think I made the right decision. I'm definitely taking advantage of it, and. I think I got better as a player, learning so many things from coaching style, the players, the just overall experience. It's been overwhelming. So I like where we are. Finals are about to start. So looking back, I think I made the right decision.
Zaza Pachulia joining us. You know, if you go back to the beginning of the season, there were a number of additions to the roster, including you, Kevin Durant, David West, and JaVale McGee, yet the team pretty much has been rolling ever since the start of the season. I know that's not easy. I know a lot of work goes into it, both on the practice court and in the film room. So what was it like stepping onto the court with Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, and Klay Thompson for the first time?
Yeah, obviously, we all know they're mega stars in this basketball world, right? So MVPs and championship final, et cetera. In the beginning, you just try to get to know them, with their personality and the kind of people that they are on and off the court. And I'm telling you, there are no egos. First thing comes in your eyes and your mind that they're no egos. They're very down to earth, really great guys. And all about the team, all about, enjoying this time together, being a good teammate and helping each other. So that really made easy for transition for all the newcomers, including me, obviously, to get used to and get the chemistry right for the team.
Yeah, I would think also when you see some of the best players in the world check their egos at the door the way they do, that certainly is going to send a message. Now, some guys in your situation maybe could possibly be worried about stats, but you're focused on the little things like setting screens, the hockey assists, and defensive positioning. So how much pride do you take in the fact that you can impact the game in ways that do not necessarily show up on a stat sheet?
Yeah, those kind of things really help in the team. I was being in the league for such a long time, playing with different coaches and different great players. I understand what the little things does for the team and brings on the table. And I tell you what, even though it's not mentioned a lot from the media, on the paper, on the stat sheet, my coaching staff and my teammates really appreciate it. Every single day I'm getting compliments from them, and that means a lot to me. End of the day, we're playing for each other, right? I mean, in the locker room, whoever we have as a players and as a staff, that's what we care about. We care about each other, and we care about each other's thoughts. We listen to each other, what we can do better and how we can help, and we hear each other's compliments. So, you know, from Steph to KD to coaching staff, they appreciate my presence, and it motivates me to do even more.
Clones. Let me talk to you for a minute about Stamps.com. Stamps saves you time and money, which you can use to grow your business. I can mail any letter, any package, using just my computer and printer, and the mailman will pick it up. I can avoid the hassle of the post office and mail everything from postcards to envelopes to packages, domestic or international. You can create your Stamps account in minutes online with no equipment to lease and no long-term commitments. Click, print, mail, and you are done. Unlike the post office, Stamps.com never closes. Print postage for letters or packages at your convenience, 24/7, 7 days a week. It's convenient, it's easy, it's reliable. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps service with a special offer that includes a four-week trial plus postage and digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage. Type in Rome. Stamps.com. Enter Rome. Stamps.com. Never, ever go to the post office again. That's Stamps.com. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. Go back earlier in the playoffs, specifically Game 3 of the series against Utah. That was a night that will go down in NBA history as the night where you outscored Klay Thompson. How did Klay take that news?
We became friends. He didn't take us that much time to become friends and find something, you know, find a good chemistry and a lot of similarities we have. I felt confident to post that on my social media that when I was scored, it was historical night. It was the first one, and not only one, actually. We had it a couple of games later again that I outscored him, but, you know, I thought the first one was the most important one.
This is Zaza Pachulia joining us. Since you mentioned social media and the fact that you play with other great players, last season you played with Dirk in Dallas. And back in January, Dirk tweeted out a photo of him dunking, and you responded with, quote, "It's a Photoshop." You played with Dirk, so what did you think when you saw that photo of him taking flight for a dunk?
For a 30-year-old man from Europe, dunking, still dunking, you don't see that a lot. And, such a pleasure and honor for me to play with him and spend a year, share the team, the court with him. It was in locker room. You know, amazing guy, really good guy. We're still talking, still friends, with a beautiful family he has, and definitely learned a lot. It was a great experience for me to be in play for Dallas Mavericks last year. So we're still in touch. He's been in the championships. He's been really helpful to me, kind of talking about the challenges that comes with it, being part of the championship team. So I can say nothing that best for about this guy.
We're talking to Zaza Pachulia. Zaza, speaking of challenges, as you look at Cleveland right now, and you've got some time yet, and you're doing all your work, but as you look at the Cavaliers, obviously you've got LeBron, who's never played better. And on top of that, you've got Kyrie, who's playing at the highest level. And even Kevin Love, to me, looks better than he's ever looked in Cleveland. So lots of different challenges. But as you break that down, what's your biggest concern about the Cavaliers, and what's the biggest challenge you face as a team?
Honestly, we have to worry about ourselves. I really like the talent we have in our locker room. And as far as we come out and perform and play our game, I like our chances to win the title. Not worrying about what Cleveland does or what kind of personality, what kind of talent they have. Obviously, they have talent as well, but I like ours better. Looking forward to the finals.
You know, one final thought. Your assistant coach, Ron Adams, said that one of the things that he's most proud of is watching how you've grown and adapted your game to what the team needs, and he referred to you as, quote, a lifelong learner. And as proof of that, you own a number of hotels and a basketball academy back in Georgia. And in the summers, you've been taking business classes at Harvard, Northwestern, and Emory. So what inspired you to do that? And then what's your biggest takeaway from those classes?
Well, I understand one thing, that basketball is temporary. I wish I can play basketball all my life, but, you know, some point it's going to end. And also being so active in my life, in my career, I can't just sit at home and, you know, watch TV after I'm done playing basketball. So I'm kind of building a base and preparing myself for after my basketball career. Obviously, business is something I'm interested in. And, you know, every summer taking advantage of these long summers and going to different classes, learning something new, meeting some entrepreneurs that attending the same class. And it's an amazing experience. I definitely recommend to other athletes to do the same, not necessarily in the business, but whatever they're interested in, take advantage of this time where you can afford paying for the school and tuition, because it really gives you a lot, and it's a great experience.
As baseball brawls go, Nats v. Giants, Harper v. Strickland, I mean, that's about as good as it gets. Even if a number of NFLers were laughing at how these two went about giving each other the hands. Despite that fact, it all went down the eighth inning when Harper stepped in against Strickland for the first time since the 2014 postseason, when he wrecked him with a couple of bombs. Obviously, Strickland had not forgotten that.
For Harper, straight up on the right side of the infield, the left side toward the middle, and the pitch inside hit him, and Harper just pointed out, Harper's charging the mound, and he throws the helmet, and now there's a fist fight. Harper's landed a couple of blows, and now the dugouts have emptied, they've been separated, Strickland was knocked down, Harper was still on his feet, and Harper had no doubt that Strickland threw at him, and threw the helmet in his direction. The helmet was way wide toward the second baseman's area.
Well, that's fortunate. That's about the only thing. And Zimmerman has just yanked Harper and is taking Harper toward the dugout. Harper's off by himself with Zim, carrying him to the dugout, basically, pushing him into the dugout.
Now, the last thing the Nationals needed was for Harper to get himself thrown out of the game.
Well, and potentially suspended. I mean, he charged the mound.
My thanks to Drowning Pool. Oh, and Nats Radio. So obviously Strickland comes out and says after the fact that he was just trying to come inside with a fastball and it just happened to get away from him. Something that obviously his own catcher, Buster Posey, did not buy, because Posey did not move an inch when Harper went to the mound. You know, normally a catcher will try and jump in there and wrap up on the batter before he gets there. Posey did not move an inch. And I've never seen a catcher do that before, ever, in that situation. His whole vibe seemed to be, for who, for what? And honestly, I can't say that I blame him. I can't say that I blame him. It was his own pitcher that essentially incited that riot. Now, there's also that school of thought that maybe Strickland said to Buster Posey, I'm going to dot this guy. Let him go. Let him go. Let him get to the mound so I can punch him in the face. Maybe. I tend to think that's not what happened. I tend to think that Posey thought to himself, man, you're on your own. Are you kidding me with that? Really? And I think that's why he didn't go out there. You know why? You dot this guy because you couldn't keep him in the yard 3 years ago. And as Harper points out, did it after their team won that series and then went on to win the entire thing. And 3 years later, he's intentionally dotting a guy with 98 mile per hour heat. So I could see where Harper was pissed. I could even see where Posey was pissed, because he knows that when the Nats do decide to retaliate, and they will, maybe even tonight, that Posey's the one who's going to get dotted. So he's catching some heat for, quote, not having his guys back, or for being a bad teammate. When to me, it's all on Strickland. I mean, if anybody was acting like a bad teammate, it's Strickland. He's the one that put his teammates at risk. And again, for what? Because he couldn't get this guy out 3 years ago. Exactly what part of the code is that? Yeah, I know. We never played the game. Certainly not at that level. We just don't get it. Who are we? And by we, I mean me, you, and everybody else. Who are we to jump in and try and decipher what that code is? Yeah, help me out then. Anybody who's played the game at that level, help me out, because I don't understand that part of the code where a guy doesn't get a guy out 3 years ago in a series that they won in a year where they went on to win the whole thing, and he's looking to retaliate now. For who? For what? All right, so he stared too long at the home run. What, you mean that second one where he didn't know whether or not the ball was fair or not? You want him running down the first baseline? It might be even a worse look to style it running down the line on a foul ball. So the guy stayed in the box a little bit longer. Even if you think that he styled it a little bit too long, a 98-mile-an-hour heater is not just cause. That's not justification for that. That punishment does not fit that alleged crime. And again, this whole thing about the code where guys can't style home runs, because they can style anything they want in any other sport, and people like it, but not in baseball. So I don't have a huge problem. In fact, I don't really have a problem at all with Posey. I guarantee Posey was thinking to himself, hey, man, you're on your own. Really? Really? Now they're going to hit me. Thanks for that. And now if I've got to go in there and be in the middle of that, I might catch some friendly fire if one of our guys runs into me, like Samardzija did. You know what happens in those piles, man? Bad things. So that's why he didn't go out. So what do you think? Do you think less of Posey for not going out, or do you understand where he was going? Because I know this. He's got a target on his back right now, so he couldn't be too happy about that. And by the way, he's not the only one. Here's what he had to say after the game.
After it happened, I kind of saw Harper point, and then, you know, next thing you know, he's going out after him. And, yeah, and there's some big guys tumbling around on the ground. You see Mike Morse is about as big as they come, and he was getting knocked around like a pinball. So, a little dangerous to get in there sometimes.
All right, so you may think that's on him, right? You got to be out there. You got to defend your teammate. Well, the manager didn't. Bruce Bochy also said, quote, it looked bad. He admitted that Strickland hitting Harper, quote, looked bad. So the catcher wants nothing to do with it, and the manager admits that it looked bad. He's right. It looked terrible. And so did the fact that Strickland, it's a big dude now. He went crazy after it went down, and he had to be dragged off the field by four of his own guys, including Hunter Pence. And what happens if Pence gets re-injured in that process? And so some of you old school types will say, you know what? If you're Harper, you wear that. You got to wear that. Yeah, that or Strickland has to wear the fact that he got taken deep twice. I understand that Harper rubs a lot of people the wrong way. I understand that he's prone to admiring his own work at times. And that Strickland obviously felt like he did when he yacked him. But again, you can't justify hitting the guy with a 98-mile-per-hour heater over whatever crime against the baseball gods that you think that Harper committed. And no, to me, here's another argument from the purists. He hit him the right way. He hit him in the right spot. He didn't go headhunting. It's still 98-mile-per-hour cheese thrown at a defenseless batter. And it was intentional, and it was for no good reason. So I could see why he got pissed and why he, quote, saw red. I mean, it's almost like Strickland was out there thinking to himself, you know what? I hate this guy. I still hate this guy. So I think I'm going to dot him in the hip and then punch him in the face. I'm going to dot him in the hip, and if he's got a problem with it and wants to come out here to my office, I'm going to punch him in the face. I'll give Strickland this much. When he tried to duck from the flying helmet, which came nowhere near him, he did recover quickly enough to get in that first shot. It was not a bad shot, given that he was off balance and throwing off his back foot. Talk about making a guy flinch. I mean, I would too if I thought a helmet was coming at my head. But he almost threw it into the seats. Rick Spielman's my guest. Rick, it's great to have you back. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me on this afternoon.
Always good to have you, Rick. Thank you. So when you're an NFL GM, every offseason, Rick obviously is busy. But when you look at the moves that you made in free agency and the draft, as well as dealing with the health of your head coach in Teddy Bridgewater, have you ever had an offseason quite like this one?
The last 9 months, I would say, have been very challenging. You know, where you just keep plowing through it and things come up and you try to do the best you can to make the adjustments you can, but very excited about where we're at right now and what we're able to accomplish in the off season to try to fill some needs and also what we're able to get done in a draft.
All right, speaking of Teddy Bridgewater, he was able to drop back and throw in an OTA last week. Given the severity of the injury that he suffered last August, how pleased were you just to see him throwing?
I think everybody's excited just to see Teddy back out on the field again. Now, he's not cleared to practice. He could do some of his rehab, you know, throwing some individual. And we'll just keep monitoring and progressing him through his rehab. But it's nice to see him back. And I can tell you, Teddy's working extremely hard to try to get back as quickly as he can. It's just such, with such a significant injury and a very uncommon injury, especially at that position, that everything's still unknown when he'll be back, when he can play again. But I know he's doing everything he can to try to get back on the field as quickly as he can.
So to that point, I mean, there's no timeline for his return. He's doing everything he possibly can. Could you see him being ready to play at some point this season?
You just got to take it day to day. And, you know, doctors are pleased on how he's recovering. You know, our trainers are doing an excellent job in the rehab. But this was a very, very significant injury, and there's not a lot of history to put a timeline on this, especially at that position. It's very difficult to predict. So we're just taking it along, and no expectations one way or another. And when he's ready, then he should be able to go.
Vikings GM Rick Spielman, my guest. And then you've got head coach Mike Zimmer. Rick, he underwent his 8th surgery on his right eye. He's back on his ranch in Kentucky. He's watching video. He's calling and texting you his thoughts. And so how is he doing right now? And then as the GM, how do you go about dealing with that situation, which is also very unusual?
Well, we had to persuade him a little bit to get out of here and get rest. He had this last surgery, hopefully will be the surgery that corrects the issues that he has been having. I know for him to get away from here and to give that eye time to just recover and just relax and not have his blood pressure up and him screaming on the field, because that's an issue when you're, you know, after you had this 8th surgery. He's got a gas bubble in there now that we've had very positive results on so far. So hopefully he'll be back next week to get checked up and see where we go from there. But it's we have a great coaching staff. The players have been working extremely hard over the last couple of weeks since we started our second week of OTAs, and feel very confident in the coaching staff and what they're getting accomplished. But he is definitely running this team, even though it's not here.
Yeah, I wonder, Rick, when you have a guy like that who can be a little bit hard-headed, man, he grinds.
A little.
Right? And he's so competitive, and so maybe more than a little hard-headed. Is there a part of you that feels like maybe we need to protect him from himself?
It's sometimes like players, and, you know, it's just enough's enough. And it's that time of year where, you know, he went through some surgeries during the offseason, but we kept the oil in his eye because we wanted to try. He didn't want to miss the combine. He didn't want to miss the Senior Bowl. And then we were out at pro days, and he didn't want to miss any of the draft meetings. So once we got through all that and we got through the draft, we said, now it's time to shut it down. We got to get out of here for a couple weeks. Let's let this thing heal, and hopefully it'll get a positive result. And, you know, the most important thing is that you're back and ready to go for sure, you know, either at the end of this off-season program and be 100% healthy by the time we get to training camp, because we definitely need his leadership.
Vikings GM Rick Spielman joining us once again. Earlier in the offseason, you signed a running back, Latavius Murray, which meant that Adrian Peterson would be moving on. Look, you know it's a business. And in that business, like any other business, you have to make some really tough decisions. But how difficult was that decision?
Very difficult. I mean, Adrian's been here since I've been here. He's, you know, maybe one of the all-time great running backs to ever play. You know, he'll always be a Minnesota Viking. You know, no matter where he ends up or how he finishes, you know, I think he'll be a future Hall of Famer that will go in as a Minnesota Viking. But those are very difficult decisions. I think the best way to treat those is I try to be as upfront and honest with him and his agent as well. Kept him informed on what was going on, where we're at in the process, and let them know, you know, when we signed Latavius, that's the direction that we were going. And I think, you know, that's the best way to handle it. And I thought that they appreciated at least the upfront and honesty on the direction that we were headed.
You know, I was going to ask you that, Rick. Did you feel like, and because it is tough for both sides, do you feel like that side did understand that? Did it end on good terms, or might that take a little bit of time?
No, I think it ended on great terms. In fact, Adrian was texting me during the draft. So he was like, I always used to kid him that he was my assistant GM. but no, it ended on great terms. And I know I spoke, like you said, numerous times to Adrian and spoke to him the day after we signed Latavius. He was nothing but very appreciative of Minnesota, of the fans, of the organization, and it ended on extremely, really, really solid, positive terms.
Well, since he signed with the Saints, that means he's going to return to face you in week one. What do you think it's going to feel like to see him on your field in the opposing team's colors?
It'll be awkward, to say the least, but I know it'll be it's amazing how the league can set us up for Monday night against New Orleans before Adrian even signs there, but that's it's amazing how that works out.
What do you make of that?
Yeah, it should be a very electric atmosphere to open up. And to go against maybe one of the all-time greatest Minnesota Vikings on that Monday night. So I know we'll be looking forward to the challenge. I know he definitely will be looking forward to the challenge, and I know our guys will be excited. It's the first time in his career that our guys actually get a chance to try to tackle him. So it'll be a very fun game, I think, for everybody, very electric, and there'll be a lot of people out to prove a point.
Rick Spielman joining us for a few more moments. So in the course of the offseason, as I mentioned, you signed Murray. You worked to improve the offensive line in free agency, and then you draft Dalvin Cook out of Florida State. He had some off-the-field issues at Florida State. I know you spoke with him before you drafted him. Can you give us a sense? What was the conversation like, and what did you hear from him that made you feel like he'd be a good fit for your team and your organization?
I think just through the whole process, and, I spent on Friday, I talked with him for about 45 minutes and went through everything with him again, and he was very sincere over the phone. The one thing, he was very consistent with his answers. I know he was the same answers he gave me on that day as what he was giving us at the combine and through the whole pre-draft process. So I know, felt very strongly and talked with our ownership group and with our coaches and everybody in the building involved that he was the right fit for the Minnesota Vikings, not only on the field and off, but off the field as well.
Ricky signed or re-signed Terrence Newman in the offseason. And to me, this guy's one of the most amazing players I think I've ever seen in the NFL. He's celebrating his 39th birthday before the start of the year, yet he's still playing at such a high level. DBs are not supposed to be playing that well that late into their careers. So how do you explain him doing so?
I don't know if it's explainable, to be honest with
right.
you. It's just a rarity. And to see him out there and the way he played for us last year, we have a couple of young corners that we're very excited about with Trey Waynes, and Mackenzie Alexander is going to play a significant role for us this year. And, Xavier Rhodes, who went to his first Pro Bowl, but to have a guy like Terrence Newman, having that insurance where he can still go in there and play at a high level, Zim always preaches he can never have enough cover guys and not have enough pass rushers. And Terrence is someone that probably, I don't know if you ever see that again, a guy that can play at that level at that age, especially at that position.
I mean, what is it? I mean, obviously he does his homework. He's obviously got a great head for the game. I mean, part of it is probably something that you can't teach or learn, but he's just kind of wired for it. Is it all those things together? I mean, I can't figure out how to explain that guy doing what he's doing at that age.
It's a little bit, has to do a little bit with genetics, I would think, but I've never been around an NFL player that approaches a game like he does. He's a true pro's pro. It's almost like he's a player coach. All our young guys gravitate to him. He's a great teacher out there on the field trying to help them with their technique and help them evolve their game. And he works consistently at it. I mean, he's always in great shape. He works year-round, and he's just one of those players that you probably won't ever see again that plays at that particular position at that age. And, last year I thought he played maybe one of his better years.
I mean, how much longer can he keep that up?
I don't know. He still has a love for the game. He still enjoys going out there and practicing. He loves being a part of the locker room, and he's a huge part of our leadership down in that locker room. And, he's going to – who knows when he's going to hang it up. But, as long as he can go out there and function and play at the level he's playing, I think he'll continue to play.
My guest, of course, Eddie Olczyk. Eddie, so good to have you back. How are you?
Hey, what's up, Jim? How you doing, pal?
Good, good. Ed, great to talk to you. There's so many different directions we could go in coming off last night's game, Eddie, but let me start with, what did you make of what you saw, and did the better team win last night?
Second question first, no. The Nashville Predators were the better team. But as you know in sports, Jim, sometimes the best team doesn't always win, and last night I think was a perfect example. Ottawa came out with a tremendous start. had the goal disallowed. That gave Pittsburgh a little bit of jump, and then they took over the game, and they were physical, and they were winning foot races, and Nashville was on the run. And, Jim, we've talked a lot about it over the years. I mean, you get these momentum swings and surges, and when you have it, is what the hell do you do with it? Are you able to draw a penalty? Are you able to score a goal? And then when the skate's on the other foot, it's, you know, everybody says, well, you got to get the momentum back. Well, first you got to stop it, you know, so how do you stop it? And then when you get it, and then what do you do with it? And look, and that's what happened with Pittsburgh. I mean, Nashville had all the momentum, the disallowed goal. Pittsburgh found their game. They got three goals, you know, bang, bang, bang. The last one, obviously, very unfortunate going off of Matthias Ekholm. But, and then from then on, I mean, Nashville continued where, you know, they left off. And I touched on this at the end of Game 7 in the Eastern Conference Final, Jim, between the Penguins and Senators. And one of the things my great partner, the great Doc Emmerich, asked me at the end of the broadcast, just looking ahead to, you know, the Penguins and in the Stanley Cup Final against Nashville, was, you know, where is this team? And for me, I looked at it and go, look, you know, at times in these playoffs, especially the latter two rounds, they look like they were out of gas. They look like they were on fumes. And I think the long seven-game series against Ottawa, the seven-game series, the hard series against Washington, and, yeah, they played Columbus and beat them in five games, but that was more like six and a half games, Jim. So that was, to me, is, you know, how much more does Pittsburgh have left in the tank? And last night it just didn't seem like it had much, but they found a way to win a game, and that's a sign of a true champion.
Eddie Olczyk joining us. Eddie, so what about that? Just to complete that thought, I mean, if you're Mike Sullivan, obviously you're pleased about that win, and they found a way to dig deep and get it, but how worried are you about the fact that they went nearly 37 minutes without a shot on the net?
Yeah, it's probably concerning, but I think it's probably a tad less, Jim, because of they got game one of the Stanley Cup Final. Now they're only three wins away from going back-to-back. You know, the one thing that Nashville can do, and I saw it firsthand in the Chicago series when they swept the Chicago Blackhawks, and, oh, by the way, the Blackhawks only scored three goals in four games, Jim, and two of those were on the power play. So, you know, Nashville knows how to play. They can play a fast game. They can play a skilled game. And they can muck it up if they want. And that's the sign of a team that has the ability to be able to overcome some adversity, you know, dictate the terms or play the way that the game is going. And I think for the Pittsburgh Penguins, they have to realize it's got to be a straight-ahead type of game. You know, the fancy plays aren't always going to be there. I think they turned down some opportunities last night in the game early, Jim, to get the puck to the net. And when you do that, it forces the team to defend, but also it may create a second, third chance opportunity. But I think there should be some concern there in Pittsburgh, just the way that that game went. But again, they won the game. That's all that matters. They know they're going to be better. Nashville knows they're going to be better. And we'll see what happens some 30 hours from right around now, tomorrow night here in the Berg.
Eddie Olczyk, the lead NHL analyst and horse racing analyst for NBC Sports. Eddie, you talked about momentum and how hard it is to get, how hard it is to keep, and then you talked about that disallowed goal. What did you make of the decision to disallow P.K. Subban's first period goal?
Yeah, it was so close, Jim. I mean, we tried to break it down on our telestrator on NBC last night and just try to explain to people exactly what they were looking at. And again, I thought it was too close to overturn. But the officials in the war room, situation room in Toronto, and the people on hand from the National Hockey League, along with the linesmen, felt that, Philip Forsberg had lifted up his skate and was offside prior to the puck entering legally. And, you know, we see that a lot, and, you know, they're looking at a lot of different things, but it is, it's micro inches, right? I mean, that's exactly what it is. And, you know, they blow it up, they see what it is, and if it's offside, you got to make the call. And look, you have to trust that the league saw that it was offside. They got all the input, and they made the right call. Now, again, on the broadcast, I thought it should be a good goal because I didn't think it was conclusive enough to see the right skate of Philip Forsberg continuing to stay onside. But those are the rules. You got to overcome that adversity. Nashville wasn't able to. Pittsburgh took advantage of it, and we had one heck of a hockey game last night with it pretty much being one-sided from the team down there in Smashville.
Yeah, it was a tremendous game, Ed. And then you got Pekka Rinne, who's been an absolute monster for the Preds throughout the playoffs, but he did not have a great game last night, obviously. But, Eddie, it's not the first time he struggled against the Penguins. Is it just an off night, or does Pittsburgh know something about this guy that others don't?
Well, I thought the first goal was a bad goal, Jim. You know, the 5-on-3 goal, yeah, it's 5-on-3. You know, you're two guys late if you're the Nashville Predators. But that puck's got to be stopped on Evgeny Malkin. He was able to see it. We had a great look on our NBC game last night on our broadcast where, you know, Rene had good position. He saw it. He wasn't screened. And he just didn't get a glove on it. Like that, you got to get a save there. Like that can't go in. And the last goal of the game, I mean, look, it was a heck of a shot by Jake Guentzel. I mean, it was just a tremendous release. He changed the angle. He goes, you know, top shelf it in. He goes bar down, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, they hadn't had a shot in 37 minutes and 9 seconds. And, you know, you got to get a save. And that is the difference. If you don't have goaltending, you're not going to win in the playoffs. And, Jim, we've talked over the years for a long, long time. You know, I think the guy in goal can be the greatest equalizer, you know, not only in the National Hockey League, but in all professional sports, because you could have a team that could really lay that egg, and you could have the guy in goal to really make the difference. Now, was Matt Murray the difference last night in the game? You know, I mean, he gave his team a chance, but, you know, I think on the other end, you know, when you give up a bad goal in the playoffs, especially against a team like Pittsburgh, they're going to feed off of that. And look, he couldn't do anything about, you know, the beautiful backdoor play from Chris Kunitz after outstanding work from Crosby to get Sheary for the second goal. And then the third one was a lucky bounce. I mean, that, you know, that kind of stuff is going to happen. But, you know, you got to make the routine save 110% of the time. And as I said before this series started, is that which goaltender is going to make that routine save all the time? And the guy that doesn't is probably going to be on the short end of the stick. And last night, to me anyways, I thought a bad goal on goal number one on Malkin. And then, you know, that last one, you got to get a save. Now, I know it was a great shot, but again, at that time of the game, you got to get a save, and Rene wasn't able to get it done.
Game two, Nashville at Pittsburgh tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern, NBC Sports Network. Eddie, before I let you go, obviously you're also a horse racing analyst for NBC2. We're now just a week and a half away from the Belmont Stakes. With two legs of the Triple Crown behind us, what do you make of what you've seen from the Derby and the Preakness?
Absolutely wide open, pal.
Right?
You know, you could make a case for, you know, going into the Derby and then going into the Preakness. You know, I really love Classic Empire in the Preakness. I wasn't overly a big fan of the ride that Julien Le Perreux gave Classic Empire. I thought he moved way too early. Jerry Bailey on our NBC coverage said it right after the race. Look, if you're going to make a move that early, you better know what the hell you have under you. And, you know, give Cloud Computing and Chad Brown and Javier Castellano a lot of credit for just stalking the fast pace. But, you know, me, you know, going into this mile and a half, I mean, it's a testing distance. A lot of these horses will never run that distance again. I think you can make a case for probably five or six, Jim, just kind of looking at the early charts and, you know, who's going to go and what have you. But look, for me, if Classic Empire does go, he's had a tough campaign here the last little while. I mean, he was all out in the Preakness the last 3/8 of a mile and then some. You know, we saw what happened to him in the Kentucky Derby, getting bounced around and didn't have the greatest trip. And then the race before that at Oak Lawn Park at the Arkansas Derby, I mean, he was all out to win that race. So you're going to ask Classic Empire, the 2-year-old champion, to, if he does run into Belmont, it'll be his fourth race and I think just shy of 60 days. To me, as a horse player and a guy that loves to get his feet wet, I look at that and go, you know what, I'm going to take my chances and just, you know, try to beat him, because that is going to be asking an awful lot, especially coming off that tough beat in the Preakness. But it's wide open, Jim. It really is.
Eddie, isn't it something? I had Classic Empire myself in the Preakness as well. I'm not saying that that's what I do or that's where I live, but I felt really good about his chances. The 2-year-old champ, as you point out, Eddie, can you explain for like a lay observer what a challenge it is for any of these horses to run in all three of those races, much less win any of them, but just to run them all?
It's incredible. I mean, it is. That's why we've had, Jim, we had the American Pharoah a couple of years ago. That's why we only have one Triple Crown champion here in the last, what, just under 40 years. I mean, that's why it is a test of champions to be able to run a mile and a quarter and then shorten up a mile and 3/16 and then go a mile and a hook, a mile and a half at Belmont. And it's amazing. I mean, these animals are super special, and the ones that are able to take part in all three certainly separate themselves from a lot of other, you know, a lot of other horses that, you know, maybe don't have the ability or don't have the endurance to be able to run in all three in a short period of time. And you're asking a whole heck of a lot. I mean, this horse has been a champion, as you mentioned. But at the end of the day is that, you know, you got to be able to find a way, because nobody's going to remember that Classic Empire, you know, ran fourth in the Derby and then ran second in the Preakness. And, you know, we'll see what happens in a Belmont, but just to get in the starting gate for any of these races are amazing. But to think about them starting and, you know, one horse starting in all three races is really a testament to the ownership, to the training, and obviously to the four-legged athlete.
Let's do this. Little Rock, Arkansas. John, what's cracking?
You got it, Rome. I hope you had a lovely Memorial Day weekend. Tigers on the pipe. Staying up all night. Tigers on the pipe. Staying up all night. The first time he smoked it, it blew his doggone head off in the big city streets. Beep, 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 beep. But the only difference, it's in the coppers. He needs Tigers on the pipe. Staying up all night. Tigers on the pipe.
You don't like that cup.
I don't like that cup. Not a very good cup.
You know, John, it's not a bad idea, and I understand that you play the hits. You got to play the hits. But didn't you already do Lamar Odom's on the pipe? Wasn't Odom on the pipe once before?
Odom's on the pipe.
I knew it.
Staying
so in other words, you resubmitted
night.
The exact same song and just changed out Odom for Tiger. Let's go to Long Beach. Iray Craig. Iray, what's up?
Romy, how you doing, buddy?
Great, Iray. How about you? What's going on?
I'm just killing time between shows, dude. Got the Dead in town for tomorrow and Thursday, so couldn't be better, man. Couldn't be better. But listen, dude, I don't know if it's fate or coincidence, but this is the third time in the last three times I've called that you've asked for good phone calls, and John in Little Rock has gone on previously to me. I'm just like, Romy, come on now. What's going on? I got to listen to that clown singing about Tiger being on the pipe. Dude, if Tiger was on the pipe, he would not be nodding out at the wheel. Now, let's get serious for a moment here, Romy, actually. Tiger is in a bad spot, dude. I speak from experience when I tell you I could not caution all, but I still might warn a few. That guy is on some serious, serious tranquilizers. We're not Vicodin, dude. That guy's on like fentanyl, oxys probably, like you mentioned. I mean, he is on the grade A, top shelf Elvis Presley type prescriptions. And dude, that guy has a serious issue, man. I mean, a serious issue. He's going to have to go through it before he ends up getting better, and that sucks. Also, dude, it was great to see you back in the winner's circle with Tammany Gard there Saturday. Very impressive. And, Romy, how about my Dodgers, dude? How about this kid Bellinger winning Player of the Week his first week in the National League? Also, first Dodger rookie with 10 home runs before the All-Star break, and we're not even to June. JT's on the DL. Gonzalez is doing nothing, and the Dodgers have won 10 out of 12, are half a game out of first place, and ready to roll, dude. And we swept the champs. What do you think about that, bud?
I think they look great. Ira, you're right. I definitely should have taken your phone call instead of John and Little Rock's. Good job checking us out, clones. Thank you very much. I appreciate you. So hit subscribe if you have not done that. Tell a friend if you haven't done that already. And trust the podcast most of all. Check back Wednesday for more of our Daily Jungle.